Welcome to Think Orphan, the podcast for orphan excellence. Real talk with real people navigating the global orphan crisis. Let's join our hosts, Phil Dark and Rick Morton.
All right, welcome again to the Think Orphan podcast. This is Rick Morton joining you today with my co-host, Phil Dark. Phil, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing real well. You know, those of you out there, you have no idea what goes into making a podcast. And just as we were getting ready to record this episode, which we're so excited to get out to you, we couldn't even record because Mac keeps changing all kinds of things. And GarageBand, for those of you who record on GarageBand, it's not as easy as you might expect sometimes. So anyway, folks, we are excited today. That was just bonus coverage for you out there. If you're frustrated with us, now you know that you're not alone. So we are here to serve.
Phil, I don't know if Tim Cook actually listens to our podcast. I'm going to say that he probably doesn't. But yeah. Tim, if you're out there, for the love, please quit changing GarageBand.
Yeah, quit changing everything for that matter. Like, you know, there's just so many things. I like change, but, you know, change when it's necessary, needed change is good. Change for change's sake sometimes, you know. You kind of outthink yourself sometimes. Anyway, that's a great lesson for just orphan care in general. You know, that wasn't even planned. That's bonus coverage, folks. But today we are here to serve, as I said, and I'm excited for today. How about you, Rick? How are you doing?
Man, absolutely. Got an exciting interview with a great guest that we know and love, and can't wait to get into it. So. Why don't you tell us about who's on today?
Yeah, so this guest you have heard before. I've interviewed him before on this show. I'm very excited to get him on again. And the reason we have him on again is because he's got a great new book that he wrote with his wife. This man is Mike Berry, and the book is Honestly Adoption. And so, as I said, he wrote it with his wife, Kristen. They do the podcast together. Many of you, I know from talking with you out there, many of our listeners listened to Mike and Kristen's podcast as well. Fantastic podcast that does talk about adoption and foster care and everything that goes on with that. This book is actually it's a really good book. You know, don't let it fool you that they asked me to endorse it. So I did endorse it. So I like to tell people I helped write the book, but because I'm in there. But, you know, what do you think about that, Rick? Does that count?
I think you don't understand the concept of endorsing a book.
No?
That's kind of what I think. Because you didn't write it, Phil. You wrote a paragraph to tell people to read it.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to get, boost my resume. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So, you never know. I thought I'd give it a shot. But, folks, Mike's going to tell us about it in this interview. I just look forward to getting these interviews out to you folks, as I talk about all the time, that I learned so much from them, and I have no doubt that you guys out there are learning a bunch from these interviews as well. So please let us know what you're learning. Let us know what you feel about the show through rating and reviewing the podcast, from asking us questions, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's via email, through the comments section of the podcast. I just, very much get excited when I see the engagement from you folks out there, the conversations that you're having. Share them with us, because it's something that we definitely read and we definitely take to heart. So without any more from me and Rick right now, I'm sure so many of you out there right now are saying, Phil, just stop talking and let us listen to Mike Berry. So that's what I'm going to do right now. Well, Mike Berry, it is so good to have you back on the Think Orphan podcast.
Yeah, man, it is so good to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
So what brings you back, as we'll share a lot more about it during this conversation, is you got a new book out. And I'm very excited for the release, because I was able to get a little sneak preview of it. Now, finally, other people are able to learn from it and be able to just glean from the wisdom that you and Kristen have gained over your lives and over your experiences. And so,
yeah,
can you just share a little bit about the book called Honestly Adoption, and why you wrote it, what the kind of quick story of the book is?
Sure. Yeah. Well, Kristen and I co-wrote it together, and really, the book itself, Well, let me go back in history a little, or a little bit back in time, to give you kind of the full scope. And I'll do this as quickly as possible. But back in 2015, and I co-wrote a book that we self-published called The Adoptive Parent Toolbox. And the Adoptive Parent Toolbox was basically answers to as many questions as we could think of when it comes to adoption, when it comes to foster care. And basically we wrote that as it was actually an answer to something we wish we would have had back in 2002 when we started the adoption journey. We had all these questions and not very many answers. In fact, oftentimes we often say it like this, that it was like we were knocking on a door over and over again and nobody was answering. And so we wrote that book, The Adoptive Parent Toolbox, which some of your listeners may have a copy collecting dust on a shelf somewhere. Mm-hmm. But
Mike,
we wrote it.
Actually,
you might. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your support. So just kidding. So I remember looking at that book when it showed up, and again, we self-published it, we self-edited it. It was kind of, it was awesome to write it 'cause it was our first book, but it was also semi sort of exhausting because we did it all ourselves. Right. And I remember looking at this book and thinking, this is just the beginning. We're going to expound on this later on someday. I remember having that thought. And fast forward, 2018, about a little early 2018. So we're talking like a year and a half ago. My publisher Harvest House approaches myself and Kristen and says, we want you to co-write a book and we want to title it after your podcast. And our podcast is called the Honestly Adoption Podcast. And we want it to be, and as we brainstormed with them, we decided, you know what? We want this to be like this go-to resource for people who are in the pre-adoptive, pre-foster care phase of the journey. They're in the post-adoption foster care phase, or they're veterans and they've been doing it for a long time and they just realize, oh my gosh, I have a lot of questions. I'm seeing some interesting behaviors from my child who I've had for 10 years in my care, and they were perfect for 10 years and all of a sudden things have changed. We want it to be like one of those books that you could just slide across the table to somebody and say, this is going to answer almost every question you have. We hope. Right. So right. We decided, okay, so let's write this. And thus, Honestly Adoption, answers to 101 questions about adoption and foster care came to be. And that I remember, as we wrote it, thinking this was the thought that I had in 2015 come to fruition, right. That we wanted to create a book really based out of our own journey and some of the answer. It's basically a book that we wish we would have had in 2002. You know, all these questions. I didn't understand how trauma history impacts present behaviors. I didn't understand how trauma changes the brain. I didn't know the importance of fostering healthy relationships with birth family members, you know, so on and so forth. That's where this book came from. So it's really out of our own pain and our own wishing, I should say, we had a resource like this, that this book comes to us.
Right. And what's the ideal time for someone reading this book? Is it pre-adoptive, post-adoptive? People have been doing it for a long time. Is there a particular target audience that you guys thought of when you wrote the book, or is it more of a general book for anyone interested in adoption or knows people interested in adoption?
You know, it's funny, as an online marketer, you know, we run an online company, and we talk a lot with our team about target audience, like who's the target audience, who's the avatar, right? And usually you want it to be like a singular person, depending on what product you're creating. And this book actually has three different avatars.
Uh-oh.
It's like the trifecta, three different target audiences, which you just said, and that is the person who is thinking about going on this journey, thinking about adoption, thinking about fostering, the person who is has already begun this journey and realizes I have a lot of questions and I need some answers, and even the person who has been doing this for years, like me. Like I started the adoption journey in 2002, and that's 17 years now. even for me in this day and age, a person like me who's been doing this for as long as I have, this book will benefit that person. And it's written in such a way where you don't necessarily, you may open it and say, you know what, this section doesn't apply to me, but this section over here does.
Right.
So it could be for the person that decides, I need a book that just answers, that gives me insight to the whole journey, right?
Yep.
And most of the journey. Then they open this book, read it cover to cover, and it's a helpful resource. But it could be the person that's like, you know what, I have a question when it comes to attachment, when it comes to co-regulation strategies. They open this book, find the section, and that relates to them. So right. it really targets three different audience members.
Yeah, the thing I really liked about it is, you know, like you just said, it you can go in and just pick that question, and you have the table of contents has the questions. It's not like the books often that you pick up and they have the chapter on whatever and they have all the questions in it. You actually have the questions in the table of contents, which is great from the standpoint of being able to just use it as a resource, as you said. It's also not an exhaustive resource on these issues, right? It's just a start. And I think what it does is it reminds us, and it's something I actually had a conversation this morning. I had a phone call and we were talking about this space, this orphan care, that, you know, entire massive thing that we do on a daily basis. You and I do it full time. And I think I'm assuming you'll agree with me on this, that it seems like every answer we come up with, and in whatever it is, there's about 50 questions behind it, right?
And oh, absolutely.
I think that this book is another, you know, there's questions behind these questions, right? There's 101 of them, and there's thousands and thousands of questions out there. But hopefully what this will do, and this is, you know, just from me, as I read it, as I'm thinking through what a great resource this is, it'll cause people to go to those other resources too, because each of these questions could be a book, right? You know, so, I'm assuming you feel the same, but I'd love to hear you kind of expound on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to say, when it comes to this book, you know, and when it comes to everything we do as a company, as a an outreach, whatever you want to say in that regard, we know that we are not going to answer every single question. We know that there's all, like you said, there's always going to be a question over the question. You know, it's going to be that way, and that's because foster care and adoption are messy for a lot of reasons. You know, there's things that you did that you thought, oh, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't see it coming. There's seasons that you did not anticipate. I mean, we're in one of those. Personally, we had, you know, I wouldn't say we had a honeymoon phase with the adoption journey or foster care journey, but we did. We adopted our firstborn daughter. We had her for 2 years before we started into foster care, and she was literally the perfect baby. You know, she slept through the night at 3 months old. She was very well adjusted, so it seemed, and you know, it wasn't until years later, not with her, but with some of our other children, that we suddenly realized, oh wow, we're noticing some things that caught us by surprise that we should have known, but we were caught off guard, you know, and we realized we've got to go back to the drawing board on some things. So all that to say, that is really the journey. So you can't, even with a book like this, you can't answer everything. But you know, and the chapters are very short also, because it's 101. It's 101 right. chapters. It's like, you know, I'm not Tolkien, for crying out loud. So it's going to be, we're going to get to the point on this. But I really think that what it does, and we do this in the book, we do point to other places, other resources. We're big advocates of saying, you know what, we don't have the answer to that, but Karen Purvis did through her work gives a lot of answers. You should check out her videos on YouTube. You know, Ryan and Kayla North have One Big Happy Home, and they do a lot of trust-based, you know, training with parents. You should check them out. So I do. I definitely agree with you on this completely. That this book is meant to be a handbook, but it's also got a lot of arrows pointing out of it. Like, go here, do this, think about this, consider this, you know. Right. And we're really big fans of doing that kind of work, because we're really all in this together. And I'm not going to start the High School Musical theme song.
That'd be so much
fun.
Can you do that?
Wouldn't that be great? No, it's not. It's not this kind, not that kind of show.
All right,
not
all
that
right.
kind of show.
I mean, so. We can do it. We're flexible.
We could. Maybe next time.
Okay.
Next time.
All right.
No guarantees, though. Yeah. So, yeah, I do think that I agree with you. I think that that's a really good way to summarize it. And it definitely, it begins to, what's the word I'm looking for? It begins to, like, pique the interest in some areas. Like, it's not exhaustive. You can't be exhaustive when it comes to understanding trauma and trauma
right.
history.
Right.
You know, it's got to be an arrow, the catalyst and then the arrow.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, it's touching on these issues. And sometimes just the question alone raises it in your head. Like, I didn't even know about that, let alone
right.
understand it, you know? So yeah. we don't know what we don't know. And so that's why I think even reading the questions will be so helpful for adoptive parents, for, you know, other people that love people who have adopted or are adopting as well, to be able to read it and understand these issues just on a really, you know, it's a surface level to a certain extent, but you go in deeper than the surface on these things too, in those couple pages.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned how each chapter is, and I hope I didn't jump ahead on what you had planned to ask me about this, but I will get into this a little bit. It's interesting that you bring up how each chapter is a question. It poses a question. The title of the chapter mm-hmm. is a question. I was asked recently where we came up with all of these questions. And we had a lot, you know, personally, a lot of these questions came from our own journey. But one of the things that we did a year and a half ago as we began writing this book was we actually surveyed our audience, our blog, our podcast mm-hmm. audience, and we asked them, we basically said, hey, help us write our next book. This is the next book that we're writing. It's a book filled with question and answers. It's a big Q&A book, basically. And so I would say 90% of the questions we have in this book are from readers, are from listeners,
That's great.
From their own experience. And we had about 600 responses, which was our team was like, yay, thank you guys, because our team, we had to spend like, you know, a couple of months going through every question and saying, okay, there's some crossover here. This is a similar question, you know? So, you know, when you talk about adoption relationships in part two, we talk about, you know, relating to birth family members, having a positive relationship with a birth mom or birth dad, you know, how to build a healthy relationship with the child you're caring for, the child you've adopted. There was a lot of responses with that, right? So we had to spend all this time condensing it down. And that points to what we were just talking about. There is still questions, you know, after you answer the question. So that's kind of a unique tidbit about how the book is structured. You know, and we have 8 different parts to the book.
Yep.
And I said, 90% of the responses were from adoptive and foster parents.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And it's very apparent. These aren't just questions that you're pulling out of the blue. They're questions that are real questions, you know, that are very specific at times as well. Like in the trauma section, you have, what should I do if our child is downloading pornography? What should I do when my teen displays risky behavior? What should I do? How should I handle an older child's tantrum in public? I mean, things like that, that aren't like just generic things. These are specific things that people are dealing with. I mean, those things, a lot of us that aren't adoptive parents will say, well, how do I deal that with my kid? But obviously it's in the context of trauma, which is different, right? You know, in some ways the same, some ways it's different, right? So with, you know, before we get into the specifics of the book, I mean, we did a little bit there, but you know, I want to go in a little bit more on a couple of the sections. You know, you, as you said, you co-wrote this with Kristen. It's your second one together, right? Is that right? Your second one?
Or yeah, if you include that, the original adoptive parent toolbox,
Of course I include that. It's,
it's
in a book form, and you have your name
true,
on it. So it counts for sure. So, you know, for those out there who have never written a book with their bride or their, you know, husband, is it more like a counseling session, a fight, or a couple's getaway to write a book with your bride and your beloved?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of a mixture of like a bar fight, counseling session, legal separation. No, I'm totally kidding. That's terrible. That's terrible. No, it's very, very interesting. Kristen's going to be like, did you actually say bar fight?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, she's not here. So, you know,
you can say whatever I want.
Exactly. And it's right because she's not here. So
actually, yeah, she would actually question me on saying bar fight over legal separation. So, hey, world, I promise we have no problem.
Right.
We're happily married.
Marriage is good. Marriage is good. Let's preface it with that, right?
Yes. There you go. Yeah. So it's interesting that you bring this up because, and I knew it was, I could tell you were going this direction because we've had several people ask us that. Now, the thing you need to know is that Kristen and I are both first children. Mm. Like growing up, we were both the oldest growing up. And if there's any oldest children out there, adults now, of course, but you were the oldest child growing up in your house, you know how this goes. It's your sandbox, it's your toys, and you say who plays in the sandbox and which toys you play with and how long you play in the sandbox, right? So the two of you get married and it's a very interesting dance, right? Mm. In life in general. But then you decide to do something that is unbelievably rewarding but also unbelievably exhausting, you know, a full year of an emotional roller coaster as writing a book is, as you know, Phil. It's not just, oh, we write a book over 3 weeks or so and bam, it's done. It's not easy. It's hard. It was an interesting journey to do this with her because even though we did the self-published title back in 2014, 2015, this was a different experience because of the way we approached it. Because number one, we have a lot more perspective than we did 5 years ago. And sometimes we have different perspectives. So, and we also discovered how different our work styles are. I'm very much a quiet, processor. So the way that I work through content and I develop content is I want to be alone by myself with noise canceling headphones on. And I want to think about it while I'm listening to, you know, some really introspective music,
right?
Shut away from the world, right? Kristen, on the other hand, is a very verbal processor.
Mm-hmm.
So she thrives from talking about it. So anytime she's preparing a keynote or she's writing an article or a blog post or a book, she fills up and she gains perspective by verbally processing it. And I don't do that. So we've really had to learn, and this writing this book helped us gain a healthy respect and understanding for how each of us process, how the other person processes, and how we develop content. And there were dark days, of course. There were hard days, mostly because we both bring very strong perspectives on some of these topics,
right?
And we're both very much immersed in the training and the equipping of parents when it comes to these topics. And we do agree on, I would say, 97% of the content we talk about in this book, the content we talk about on our podcast and our online courses and whatnot. But this was a really good exercise for us, which was really good because we're co-writing another book due out in 2020 on a different related topic, but different adoption, foster care. So all that to say, I would never advise writing a book with your spouse or significant other if you all are having trouble getting along in the first place, you know? And it could be the smallest things, like if you guys can't get along on who does like household chores and who,
right,
you know, who does what with the kids, it's like, you probably shouldn't write a book with one another. But it was healthy and it was also challenging.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to do it again. We're already starting our writing the next book again. So
yeah,
I think going through that process with this book helped me prepare for the next book.
Absolutely.
Had to prepare more than she did because I'm the hot mess. Way more. Kristen's way smarter,
sure,
way more focused, way more dialed in than I am. And I'm not just doing the typical guy thing that always, you know, says like, oh, I married up. I really did. She is super smart. Like I default to her. I defer to her on a lot of things. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this?
Right.
Because she just has this deep, deep wisdom.
That's great. And I think what you talked about there with understanding each other is critical for anything, right? I mean, that's that's not just writing a book. That's doing life together. We're understanding the personalities. I mean, that's something we actually train on in a lot of the training we do around the world is the personality assessments. To understand each other will help you to work together, will help you to get along. And you're basically describing the difference between a outgoing person and a reserved person with verbal processing. I'm a verbal processor as well, right? So people focused, outgoing, and she's, you know, probably similar to me in that, where she's going to process everything verbally, and it drives people nuts who don't want to process verbally. But to understand that, because neither of you are going to change, right? You can probably go work in a library all day long, whereas I couldn't. And so those are something to understand. I think it's critical in the work we do. It's critical in parenting. It's critical in marriages to understand that we're all wired very differently. If you try to impose your way on them, it'll never work, right? And so to understand that. So that's cool. That's really cool. That's kind of what I expected in the answer, but it was interesting to hear how it kind of played out. So now we could talk about the finished product a little bit more. The book itself, as we've talked about, has a lot of questions that I will tell you, the parts that really stuck out to me, not because the other parts weren't great and had a ton of information that I know people will dive into and just really understand how they can parent their kids better, how they can love their kids better, how they can understand and create safety plans and get these other things. But the two that really stuck out to me were the self-care part and the adoptee perspective section. So you have two at the end of the book. But not because they're not as important. But the self-care, I think, is one that people neglect way too often. And we also, you know, neglect to see it from the adoptee's perspective a lot of times. And I can't tell you how many adoptees I've talked to saying, how come at CAFA we don't have more adoptees speak from the, you know, blah, blah, blah. How come we don't have more adoptees doing breakouts and conversations and whatnot? And I think it's a fantastic question. That you guys fortunately are having the adoptees answer some questions at the end, and then also focusing on how we can practice self-care well. So just, you know, talk a little bit about that, but also, you know, what's your favorite part of the book, if you have one? And I know that's like saying what's your favorite kid, but you know, kind of as you do it, maybe in this season of your life, like what one is speaking to you the most as an adoptive parent, you know, about everything. And I'd just like to hear you from that.
Absolutely. Well, anybody who has seen the official book trailer that's out on this book, if you haven't seen it, you need to see it, because one of the things that our producer Matt and my wife and our videographer came up with in writing the script for this is that, which I thought was brilliant. And I hadn't even thought about it until they brought it up, and I'm like, yeah, definitely. Was making the video, the focus of the video was mostly on adoptees. In fact, if you've seen the video, you know that it's this large gathering of all these families, and the video begins with actual adoptees. Some of them are my kids, basically speaking to parents and saying, I need you to understand that my heart broke when I lost my first family. I need you to understand that sometimes I'm afraid and it affects the way I behave. And it's so gripping. I mean, when I watched the first cut of this trailer, I was in tears, because we are passionate about illuminating the adoption triad. Our company is focused on our company, which is the Honestly Adoption Company, focuses on equipping and encouraging, training and mentoring foster and adoptive parents with the goal to make them the best parent possible, right? It's not to help them fix their kids, or it's not to, you know, teach them how to discipline their kids better. It's not any of that. It's to help them become the best version of themselves, the best parent possible. But along with that, we also recognize that you cannot talk about that if you're not shining a light on birth families, first families, and also adoptees. So that's the triad right there: the parent, the birth families, the adoptee. And so the final section of this book, all of those questions, and there are seven questions, are all answered by adoptees, actual adoptees that we sat down and interviewed. Because if you're going to write a book that answers as many questions as possible when it comes to the foster and adoptive journey. You cannot neglect the voices of adoptees, the voices of children who are in foster care, because this journey impacts them the most. You know, they come to us with a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, and a lot of times we as parents don't understand that. And there's a lot of reasons why we don't understand that. We actually address some of that in the book. You know, we often have this misconception that a child is a blank slate when they move to a new foster home, or when we've adopted them out of the orphanage. Like, oh, they're hitting the reset button, right? That is so not true. And to bring that into perspective and shine this bright spotlight on adoptees and basically say, we hear you, we see you, and your perspective is valuable. We value your perspective. That's the reason why we ended this book intentionally with adoptees answering. That's the reason why in the video trailer for the book, and if you haven't seen that trailer, you can go over to honestlyadoptionbook.com and watch it there. That's where it's at. But in the trailer, that's why it is mostly the perspective of adoptees, because we think that's so incredibly valuable. You know, and you mentioned self-care. Self-care is so, as you said, so often neglected. And I think it's neglected because I've thought a lot about this, because for years we neglected it too. And we still struggle with that at times. But I think the reason why it's neglected is that I think we have this misconception that we have to like step outside of this journey to care for ourselves, which may sound really weird to some people, but it's kind of one of those deals if you've ever envisioned your future, you thought, oh, okay, well, when my kids grow up, you know, and it's just my wife and I, it's just my spouse and I, we're going to like travel to Europe, you know, we're going to do that someday, right? We all have mm-hmm. those thoughts. Like I'm going to go on a Australian outback, you know, escapade, whatever you want to call it. Once everybody's in college, right? We have those like someday yep. visions, right? I think we do that with the adoption journey. I think we do that with a parenting journey. We think, okay, if I could just get through this season, then someday yep. I'm gonna fill in the blank, right? Then someday I'm gonna, you know, take care of myself. I'm gonna start exercising. You know, someday I'm gonna start saving more money, whatever it is. I think we do that with self-care. We think, we realize, oh my gosh, I need to sleep better. I need to sleep more, right? I need to exercise. I need to do something that fills me up, something for me, which I know sounds selfish, but self-care is not selfish, right? It's we often relate it to the oxygen mask, the airplane oxygen right. mask, what we call the oxygen mask philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. The flight attendant says, in the event of change in cabin pressure, oxygen mask will deploy. And if you are with small children, make sure you put your mask on first and then put the child's mask on. Well, before we had kids, when we thought we knew it all about parenting, we would think, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm always going to put my kid's mask on first, right? Because I need to, that's my focus, that's my goal. And yes, you do need to take care of your children, right? But if you're not taking care of yourself first, then what are you really able to fully care for the child? So if you don't put your oxygen mask on first and you pass out, and the child is incapable of figuring out how to put the mask on themselves, you both are at risk.
Right.
You both could be dead. You both could suffocate. And self-care, I think oftentimes we get into this mode of thinking, well, someday I'm going to do that, but right now I have to pour everything I've got into my kids and my home and my family. And yes, you do need to pour a lot of what you've got into your children, because that's our job as parents. But unless you're taking time intentionally to do that for yourselves, to care for yourselves, to fuel up, then you are not able to fully pour into your child. Now, as I said, we have these ideas like, well, it's going to be someday. You've got to figure out, you cannot step away from this journey. I realize that. You cannot just say, hey, I'm leaving for a weekend and I'm going to Morocco and it's going to be amazing and I'll see you when I get back. We can't do that, right? If you can do that, that's awesome. You should do it. But the reality is, we can't just hit the pause button on this journey and say, okay, now I'm going to go self-care for a couple of days, right? We have therapy appointments. We have IEP meetings. We have pediatrician appointments. We have caseworker visits. You know, you name it. We've got it. So the important thing is figuring out how to take care of yourself on the journey, in the middle of the journey. And so some of our very practical principles are every day or every week, intentionally look at your calendar and decide, here is a chunk of time after the kids get on the bus that I have a half hour, and I'm going to spend a half hour reading a book, and I'm not going to do another load of laundry. I'm not going to run an errand. I'm not going to check email. Things like that, mm-hmm. being intentional with our schedule and saying, okay, I only have 15 minutes. So for 15 minutes, I'm going to read. That's what I do every day. I get up before everybody else, and the first part of my day is spent reading, mm-hmm. because that's how I fill up. Right now, I can't do that. I can't just say, hey, I'm going to spend the rest of the day reading because I'm a parent and I have a responsibility. So I have to do this in the middle of the journey. And that's really why we wanted to answer some questions on self-care, not just like for us personally, but also like helping our kids practice self-care, caring for our marriage. One of the things my wife talks about, which I think was really, we can't believe that this was in there when we read the manuscript. In chapter 93 and question 93, she said she's talking about making the most of our date nights, and I mm-hmm. think in the book she actually talks about making out in the back of a movie theater with your spouse. And I was like, wow, that actually made it in the manuscript. That's amazing, right? So it's in there, people. It's in there.
That's fantastic.
So all that to say, we're passionate about that. As we are also passionate about, I'm kind of answering two things here, but we're passionate about self-care. We're passionate about adoptee perspectives and magnifying the triad, you know, parents, birth families, adoptees. And you asked another question. I can't remember what it was.
That's right. I said, do you have a favorite part of the book?
Favorite part. Yeah. Know. Yeah. I do. And it's actually the biggest section in this book. I feel like I've been going a mile a minute, but I have so much to say about this. I'm excited about this book, but the biggest section in this book is part five, and it's simply entitled Trauma. Mm-hmm. And they are questions about your child's trauma. And the reason why this is my favorite part is that for years when I was on this journey, I totally misunderstood how my child's trauma history affects their present behavior. In fact, in a lot of situations over the years, and I cringe to even say this, I would actually look at my child and think, well, you're just being a bad kid and you just want to ruin things for everybody else, right? And I didn't know that was actually a window into their past trauma, that their present behavior was actually an indication of something they went through in the past that was causing them to be afraid, to feel anxious, to feel overwhelmed, to feel nervous. And I responded the wrong way for so many years to that. And when I finally realized, oh, actually, while it appears that this child is just completely out of control and just wants to pester his brothers and sisters, actually he's feeling really nervous because what happened to him in the past has caused him to be afraid of certain things, sights, smells, sounds, causes him to react in a way. And when I really finally gained that understanding of how trauma changes the brain and how it affects present behavior, it changed everything for me. Mm. It changed how I respond. Now, I don't always respond the right way, right? Because I'm a human being, but I've become unbelievably passionate, both of us have, in equipping and training parents to understand this is how trauma has changed your brain, because when has changed your child's brain, how this is why they function differently. This is why they react in certain ways that may not make sense to you, but it makes perfect sense to them. Actually, sometimes it doesn't even make sense to them, right? So that became the biggest section in this book, because we have a lot to say on this, because this transformed gaining a working understanding, a working knowledge of how trauma changes the brain, transformed our journey.
Yeah.
So hands down, that's my favorite part of the book.
Yeah, it's a great section. They're all fantastic. It goes, just to give you guys a little more of a teaser, the first part is adoption conversations. Part two, adoption relationships. The third is attachment parenting. Four, empowering children. Five, trauma. Six, safety plan. Seven, self-care. And eight is adoptee perspectives. And so, folks, you know, I have no doubt that if you're at all a part of this journey, it will be very impactful for you. It will be something that you will learn things from. It will pique your interest on others, as Mike was saying. As we kind of finish up, there's a couple more questions. And if you could just say real quick, just when a reader finishes reading the book, or even a part of the book, as you said, just picking and choosing different questions, what do you hope they'll think and feel after they read it?
You know, I hope that they feel enlightenment, that they feel like, you know, I know we overuse this term in this day and age, but they've had an aha moment. Or a light bulb has gone off for them. And it may not be a new discovery. It may just be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And the reason I say that goes back to what I just said, that's really what's happened for us over the last 5 years in particular on this journey. And it's changed the way we've connected with our kids. It's changed the way we've related to them and built relationships with them. And we still have those light bulb moments. So one of the ways I hope that people respond to this book is they read it and they think, oh my gosh, yes, that's what I've been looking for. Like, that makes sense. It's like almost a light bulb going off in their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's what all of us kind of feel. And as we write things, as we do podcasts, as whatever, it's just that it will encourage, it will enlighten, it'll challenge people to think differently or think better about what they're doing.
Yeah.
The last question, speaking of reading, you say you read every day, you also watch stuff, I know, and you listen to things, but what have you read, watched, or listened to, you know, recently that has really impacted you and why?
You know, I read a lot of books throughout the year, but one of the books that I'm really, really fascinated with is a book called Trauma Stewardship, and it's a book written, basically it's written for, you know, first responders and people who work in shelters and you know, not necessarily, the author who is Laura Van Dernut Lipsky. I don't know. That may be right. I may have just butchered her name. Let's just say Laura Lipsky is her name. The book is called Trauma Stewardship, An Everyday Guide to Caring for Self While Caring for Others. She very lightly scratches the surface when it comes to foster care and adoption, foster parents, adoptive parents. But I love, the book has really impacted me because it's helped me to step back and recognize secondary trauma, to recognize like, oh my gosh, yeah, I didn't even realize I respond that way. I didn't even realize that it's become, for lack of a better way of saying it, desensitized or turned off to traumatic situations because I'm so immersed in this journey, right? And this book has really helped me dial into that and understand, oh, yeah, secondary trauma is a real thing, and she does a lot in terms of helping you see that. So that's a book I highly recommend.
That sounds great. I'm sure it'll help a lot of other people out there too.
Yep.
Well, Mike, thanks so much. I look forward to continuing our conversation in the future. Well, this is it for today, but thanks again for all you do. Thanks again for this, putting this book out with you and Kirsten, my daughter's Kirsten. Kristen is your wife. And, you know, I just... like I said, I look forward to seeing what this book will do in the lives of many, many people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again, Mike. Folks out there, I imagine that did not disappoint. Mike and Kristen both wrote a great book with Honestly Adoption, and it really does answer these questions in ways that are tidbit, nugget-sized answers that really you can get a lot of information from a very short amount of pages. So I really encourage this book for people out there that really are looking for advice from people who have been through it and are continuing to go through it. And as Mike talked about in the interview, as I mentioned as well, one of the coolest parts of the book and something that is so much needed in our society is really words and advice and answers from adoptees themselves. So, Rick, what did you think of the interview?
Yeah, I love Mike and love what they've done through Confessions of an Adoptive Parent and you know, and through their podcast and blog and all the different, you know, different channels. I think the thing that I really like about this book is this is to me one of those books that you can really put on the shelf as a reference book. It gives really great insight into a lot of practical questions that adoptive families ask. We've joked for years, Tony and I've joked for years about, releasing a book, something like Orphanology, the rest of the story at some point.
Right.
And really and truly, I feel like that's what, that's what Mike and Kristen have done. I think they've given bite-sized, manageable, pieces of content. And one of the things I really love about how they address many of the topics, particularly some of the things, dealing with the response to trauma, is they give a lot of good examples, and in a situation where that can be really hard to do, in being too transparent with your kids and their stories and those kinds of things, I think they walk a great line of giving, very, very specific kinds of examples and really handles to hang on to a lot of the questions that they address. So I think it's really helpful. I think this is a book also that could be really helpful to prospective adoptive families. I think one of the things we find ourselves doing in ministry a lot is trying to dispel the sort of pie in the sky Pollyanna thinking of some folks as they step toward adoption. And I think what they have done is to give a really clear and accurate picture of the blessing of adoption and I think they certainly show adoption in a positive light, but they're also truthful about where it's hard. Mm-hmm. And they're truthful about the long term, not just in the immediacy after. And so to come from a couple of adoptive parents that have been at this for 16, 17 years is it really resonates with me, because they're speaking to the rawness of the journey at times.
Yeah, something that really encourages me I can't say every, because I can't think, I don't want to use every, because I could have had one instance where I didn't have this happen. But it seems like every time I'm reading the books that have been written in the orphan care space, there really is that rawness. There is the honesty and vulnerability and transparency that I think comes with just really doing work that is kingdom driven, and people that are doing it in a way that is really a heart that is really after what God is having them do. It doesn't always happen that way, but I feel that that is something that is definitely in this book. It was in your book. It was in the co-authors that were on In Pursuit. It's been on so many of the other books that are out there, that there is a humility that is part of this vulnerability, where it's just a look. We don't have it figured out. These are the lessons we've learned. Here are some tidbits of I hesitate to say even wisdom. It is wisdom, but it's not put out there as we have all the right answers, so listen to us, oh wise ones, right? It's not, it doesn't read as a proverb or anything like that. It reads as really like almost like a journal entry, where they're, in this case, they're answering questions of people. So it'd really be like at a Q&A at a conference or something, where they're just answering questions with a real and a rawness that comes, I think, just from that experience and from the confidence to know that it's okay not to know everything, right? It's okay not to have all the answers. And some of these answers have that written into them, really, is this is one answer for what could be a very, ever-changing response. It's really a case-by-case basis on some of these things. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a line I wrote down, and I didn't write down a page number, but I remember this is early on in the book, something that they say. They say, when we honor the hard parts of this journey, we can also celebrate the deep beauty that lies in the perseverance of our children, because they are what this is all about. And one of the things that I deeply appreciate about this book and about their work is that that as adoptive parents, they continue to make this about their children, about the, you know, about their kids' journeys. And sometimes I think, you know, I grow weary of, you know, just some of the conferences and rhetoric and things and all, and it's adoptive parents that are only looking at this from their perspective and not really fully seeing the, you know, the journey and, you know, the lingering hurt at times and the, you know, the difficulty of the journey for, you know, for our kids. And so, as you said earlier, you know, this is a book that doesn't fail to look at the journey of, you know, of adoptees. I think, you know, Mike even mentioned in there, and I would encourage our, you know, if you're listening to this interview, if you haven't already, to go and look at the trailer that they've put together for the book, because in honesty, it really, it highlights the journey and the thoughts of adoptees more than families and, you know, and particularly parents who, you know, who parent these kids. And I think they, you know, they do a great job of speaking into and informing us as parents, but reminding us that the point of our parenting is our kids and ultimately leading our kids to, you know, to know and follow Jesus. And that's again, something else that I, you know, I think it's funny to read sometimes some of the reviews to things. And if, you know, if they really get hit anywhere in reviews, it's that, man, these people talk about Jesus a lot. And, you know, like, that, hey, that's okay. Like that's you know, that's something that we love and something that we, you know, that we respect greatly and, you know, just thank them for their voice.
Right. You know, something else that this this book really goes into. I mean, you talked about the trauma. We talked about the adoptee perspective, which are fantastic. And the thing that Mike talked a little bit about as well that I really appreciate. And, you know, and this is obviously coming from, as you know, folks out there, if you've listened to any more than just this episode, you know that I'm not an adoptive parent or a foster parent. But, you know, there is something in this book that I gleaned from a lot of the stuff in the book, but one thing in particular is the self-care part. You know, just any reminder that we need to take care of ourselves in the midst of these battles, and what that looks like and how to do that. You know, Mike mentioned the one part about making out in the back of the movie theater. You know, I personally am not going to condone such terrible behavior that some people may do out there. But, you know, those are the things. You got to date your wife. So if it just so happens that that happens sometime, you know, then it might. It just may happen. But, no, there's so much more to it. I mean, obviously, that was something that he said, I can't believe that made it through the edits. But those are the things that, again, it's real. It's something that isn't some airbrushed thing. It's something that, look, these are real issues. We burn out in life in different things. And the one thing that if we burn out in our parenting, if we burn out in loving our children, whether they're biological, whether they're adopted, whether they're fostered, happens all too often. And the ones that really get punished are the kids. The adults, yes, as well, but that's them doing it to themselves. But when the kids are having it done to them by parents who aren't taking care of themselves, it's something that we really need to protect against. And that's what I really appreciate in this book. You know, and it goes beyond the, you know, the analogy of the airplane with the oxygen mask coming down. That's something we hear a lot, but that's a great little shtick thing that we talk about. But what does it really look like and what does it really mean in everyday life? That's what I love about this book, is it really does go into some of the specifics and some of the actual examples that often helps when you're looking at, okay, we understand we need to, but how do we actually do it in the midst of a battle? What does that look like?
Yeah, for sure. Compassion fatigue is real. And, you know, that's, it's incredible that they have spoken as transparently as they have about the need for us to, you know, to stay healthy in order to be who our kids need. For sure.
All right, man. So we could talk about this a lot longer, but right now I think we're gonna cut it off. Unless you have anything that you wanted to add that you just really needed to add, or you'd feel like you
no, let I, down I, our I think audience. I'm good. I would just okay. say go buy the book and yes. take a look at it if you haven't, because it's a great book, and it'll continue to serve you as a resource for many, many years into the future as an adoptive parent, or you know, maybe even as a foster parent.
Absolutely. So with that, we are going to roll into the recommendations. And, you know, both Rick and I have recommendations today. And these recommendations, you know, they won't surprise you, Rick's recommendation, because, again, I tipped it off last episode. But, you know, my recommendation may come as a surprise to you folks out there, because, you know, typically we're talking about such manly things between Rick and me. You know, we're talking about football and soccer and other things like that. Today we have
soccer. You said manly things, Phil.
Yes, exactly.
Let's stick to football.
Well, you know,
let's stick to football,
the real football. So that's what we're talking about. So, but today, and it really is in honor of Mike, because I remember I can't remember if it was a conversation I had with Mike earlier or whether it was one of Andrew Schneidler about Mike talking about musicals and talking about things that are really showing the sensitive side of us of us men. And so that's what we're doing today. We're honoring that. So, Rick, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, you know, I told our listeners on the last episode of the podcast that I wanted to talk a little bit about the Downton Abbey movie, and I would just say, after having seen the movie, it didn't disappoint. I want to be really careful, because I know that there are probably people that are out there listening who have not seen the movie.
I haven't seen it either, Rick. And so I want to be don't really, ruin it for me.
Yeah, but you haven't seen the show either, which, you know, is a little it's a little pathetic, Phil.
I'm clearly not woke.
Yeah, well, you need to get woke up. Yes. and go watch this with your wife. She'll appreciate it greatly.
Okay.
But you know, so here's the thing. I think what I would say is, many times you see a movie like this, particularly if you've watched the BBC show, and you go in anticipating that it might be a disappointment. And I will say that in my humble opinion, the movie was not a disappointment. They further developed the characters that those of us that have listened to the show know and love. They used a really kind of fun and interesting and creative story in the back, you know, kind of the backdrop in the fact that the royal family was going to make a visit. That's in the trailer for the movie, so I'm not giving anything away about that. But the one plot twist that happens really early in the movie that kind of sets the tone for things is that that the house staff finds out that they are in fact not going to be able to serve the royal family, because they bring their own chefs and attendants and people with them. And so it's really kind of a fun intrigue to see the personalities and the interaction of the characters that we've come to know and love as they work through this idea of wanting to, you know, wanting to serve the family. And I think it's also a great look into a society that is transitioning, and it delves into some themes of caregiving and responsibility and tradition and looking out for the welfare of others. All of those things are present in the movie, and are things that you see, you know, these characters walk out. And so I would just encourage you, if you're a fan of period pieces, if you enjoy historical drama, this is probably one of the best that you're going to find this year in the theaters, and it builds well upon the TV series. And so I would say it's worth your time to go grab a ticket and you know, maybe even make this a date night film, which we did, and we enjoyed it.
Well, I'm going on a date tonight, and I may go see this, since there's really nothing else in the movie theater anyway except Abominable. And, you know, I don't think I'm going to go see that with my wife. So I don't know if she's going to want to, but I'm gonna pitch it, because you just sold me on it, and I'm almost in tears here on the other side of this microphone. With your
the bad news review. Is you're gonna have to watch 5 seasons worth of Downton Abbey before you go tonight.
I'll just watch it in fast forward.
It's gonna be.
I'll watch it in fast forward, and that way I can.
You mean the way people listen to us on the podcast?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wow, yeah.
How I listen to myself on the podcast. Actually, I fast forward your parts, and I listen to myself in half speed, just so I can really savor it.
You listen to yourself in half speed,
that's
just
exactly
so you
right.
can really savor it, don't you?
Yep, yeah, that's exactly right.
I know that about
that's
you.
That's exactly right. So
I know that about you.
So
what do you have?
My recommendation today is a book. It's called Redeeming Love. It's by Francine Rivers. Interesting. They had a little. As you folks know, if you listen to the show at all, I listen to my books. So I'm very clear about that. So I try not to say I read a book. I say I listen to the book. One of the cool things about it is sometimes they interview the author. And what I didn't realize about Francine Rivers, and some of you may know this, is she was like a steamy romance novel writer before she became a Christian. And then she became a Christian and she actually started then realizing, like, I can't write these books anymore. And then she actually wrote a book after that that was a romance novel, but it was based on the story of Hosea and Gomer. And so it was just a beautiful story about just the love of someone who's going to love no matter what. And it's just really that redeeming love of God in our lives and how the story of Hosea modeled that. And so this book does the same. It's set in the gold country. So it also is a period piece, historical, you know, it's not really historical fiction, but it does have some semblance of the gold rush. In California, which is another cool thing for me. It's based in Sacramento, San Francisco, which is where I'm from. And so that's another little fun part. But fantastic book. It really, really is. And so I highly recommend it, which I did not expect to do when I first started reading it. And as I told Rick before we started recording, the reason I did read it is my brother told me it was one of his favorite books ever. And I honestly was questioning, his wisdom and his discernment when he told me that. But now I can say gladly that it's a very, very solid book, and I strongly recommend it. So with that, I just hope and pray, folks out there, that you take everything you learned today, you use it in some way to help you to love orphan and vulnerable children better and better each and every day. Thanks a lot. Have a great week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Think Orphan podcast. For all the information in this week's podcast, please visit us at thinkorphan.com. You too can be part of the conversation. Send your questions to info@thinkorphan.com or join us on the Think Orphan Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next edition of Think Orphan.